huge problem with air sickness in pilot training. And I struggled for my first, couple months there. And it made me really question, was I cut out for it? Is this something I wanted to do? Flying and getting airsick is pretty miserable, actually. And so I knew that I wanted to do this, and I was just going to power through it, and went through all the programs that they have with the flight docs, and finally, just one day, it got better and better and better and disappeared. But to this day, I sit in the front seat of an airplane, and I fly the airplane. Those backseat rides are still no fun for me to this day. But it was, there's just times in your life where you think you have everything kind of figured out, you know what you want to do, and then all of a sudden you just have to kind of reassess, is this really it? And how much do I want to keep going and putting forth the effort? And I just decided, this is what I want to do, and I will get through this.
Wow. I understand. As an instructor pilot in a 38, we had that MOA, the manifestation of apprehension, and a lot of students in the early phase of pilot training kind of got dropped out, because they couldn't get over that, and that's a challenge, and for you to overcome that is amazing.
Well, and so. I think the positive thing now is now that I'm flying down at the airfield with the cadets, they get really nervous, and there's quite a bit of air sickness when cadets go fly for the first time, and I can look at them and say, look, you can get through it. I did. It's not that big of a deal. And so I think, they kind of look and go, well, you've spent 20 years flying, and you got air sick when you started. And so that's something
right.
that helps.
Right. Oh, that's good. That's an experience you can share with them, and they can understand maybe a little bit of the process that you went through in order to do that. So that's great. Okay, me.
I've always said good play is the best revenge. So you're going to find naysayers out there. You're going to find obstacles. Men and women will create obstacles for your goals, professionally and otherwise. I have four kids. They're incredible athletes. I just can't help but say that. They're really incredible athletes. And they would get singled out, little cheap shots in the corners and little trips here and there. And I have hockey players and lacrosse players and constant chippy play. And they were starting to get to their head, and they were starting to lose their game and lose their edge, and they wanted to play in college, and they wanted to get some scholarship money to play the sports they loved. And we just had to say, which is what I kind of said, this is very familiar, is when someone is creating an artificial obstacle for you, you've got to rise above, and you've just got to play a little bit better, play a little bit smarter. Good play will be your best revenge. And the naysayers, I was one of the first classes at the academy. There were people, surprisingly, that did not want me there. They did not want us there. They did not want us to succeed. They didn't want us to be correct with our, we had this knowledge we had to learn each and every day, and we would have to recite what I just considered as absolute wasteful brain power. But it was the discipline that built in me to, hey, they're asking me to do ridiculousness and memorize some stats and facts that are really not that germane to my career or my academic progress, but we did it, and we just stayed poised. People are screaming at you, little spittle is flying in your face. They would be so very close to you, but you stayed poised. You rose above the noise, and you just played a little bit better. And eventually, they have to kind of acquiesce. So that was those are my two cents. Is good play is the best revenge.
That's amazing. I know, as a student pilot, I had a guest instructor fly with me, and we finished the flight, and he turned to me and said, "You aren't going to make it." And little did he know that he just lit the fire under me. And it's like, you just watch me. So you can turn that around. You can turn that around. Because people, sometimes they don't want you to be in that position, And for whatever reason, they just don't understand why women are in this profession, or they just believe that you're not cut out for it, or they're just envious, you know, for the most part. So, but being in a men's profession, I want to talk to Eileen about, you know, during that time, going to test pilot school and being in that environment, how was that getting your foot in the door, getting that respect in that world? How would you describe how you overcame and how you went and spoke to your peers and, mm-hmm. and you know, and those above you?
I think the best way to do that, and what I did was, you know, you just try to always be super prepared, always, just try to do your best at everything. Now, obviously, you're not going to be perfect at everything you do, but I, you know, I probably studied twice as hard as you know, I had to, you know, just because I was always fearful. I felt like if I had a problem, that it wasn't just me, it was a reflection on all the women who were trying to come behind me as well. So I always felt like I had to, you know, try to be, if not the best, at least up there, you know, in contention. So, you know, and there's this saying that, you know, in order to be considered as good as a man, you have to be twice as good if you're a woman. Fortunately, that's not hard, you know, and and I wouldn't say it was easy, but that certainly was, I think, always on my mind. I always tried to be, and part of my problem too was I didn't really have any role models. You were probably in the same situation, where, you know, I don't think I met a woman who was a lieutenant colonel a full colonel until I was a lieutenant colonel. So that's how few women, you know, were in the business when I was going through. And so yeah, I had to kind of feel my way through things at times. So a lot of times I, you know, like when you're at the club, you know, you can't just be one of the guys. But you still want to be part of the group, you know, and so kind of trying to feel my way through that and be a part of that. So I think having a good sense of humor helps. You mentioned I always think I have a good sense of humor. I try to see the funny things and things and so I think that helps a lot. So to you know, to try to maintain that sense of humor. And to, like I said, to be part of the group, but without crossing that line into, you know, being one of the guys. And mm-hmm. that's kind of that line that I always tried to walk. But it is hard. I mean, it still happens to me today, where I go into a room and I'm the only woman in the room, and I sometimes feel like, you know, with it's people that don't know me, they're looking at me like, well, who's she? You know, and I sometimes still feel like I have to prove myself, to prove that I am allowed to be in that room, you know, that I'm capable of being there. So, but I think if you're just prepared and you act professionally, people don't have any reason to not want you on their team. So,
right. So Lorraine, you started flying with your husband, you know. How was he part of that equation, you know, as you progressed in your aviation career?
He's the one that never said, you can't do that. He kept saying, if you want to fly for a living, go for it. And at the time when I was not flying, I thought, yeah, I do. I'm tired of a desk job. I really do want to do this. So he was very instrumental in just letting me go. He said, I'll support you. So I thought, well, he has these visions. He's sitting there. He has these visions of coming home to the little wife, having dinner ready for him as I'm the flight instructor, getting things ready. And he didn't know me that well, so that's not the way it worked. He's very good about it, but I'll tell the one real quick story. He came home. Yes. I'd been flight instructing for about 10 hours a day, and I was sitting in front of the TV just totally dead, and he came home. He's an airline pilot, too. He came home and looked at me, and he looked at the TV, and he took his finger along the top and went, you think we could dust a little more around here? And I looked at him, and I said, yes, we could. And he said, oh, and he called a cleaning lady.
Smart man.
He's a very smart man. It's worked very well.
Very smart man. Yep. Yes, absolutely. You know, my husband and I, we've been married 45 years, and he says, communication is key to a relationship. You need to talk to each other and let each other know exactly what's going on.
That's
and not
the
hold
truth.
Back. Mm-hmm. Because you can work through things. So,
yeah.
But he's a very smart man.
And he's still very supportive. He retired 9 years ago. He was supporting me when I was trying to work up to this job, and now he said I've had it, so it's working out well.
All right. And in your career journey, how was that with all the males and getting through that?
You know, college was one thing. The academy was one thing. Right. It was a short-lived. When I was a new pilot at United Airlines, I was an engineer. There she goes. Pretty girl. I was an engineer on the 747. So that was a very interesting dynamic because I came from a four engine cargo transport where I was instructor, evaluator. Like I had done this. I had crossed the water. I had, you know, load plan my own, our loads. I had fuel planned, weather, alternates. All of those things were part of our standard mission planning. And I had typically two gentlemen that were in the front two seats, and I was the systems engineer, so I was managing, you know, fuel heat and cabin pressure and temperatures and all of those things. And I was treated like a kindergarten student that, well, let me explain this. And I finally said, I have been doing this for quite a while. So the idea that there was a stereotype associated with a woman, and I was probably 29 or 30 years old, the stereotype was like very real. And that's when I kind of realized, I go, these people don't understand that we come to this job and we're experienced, we are capable, we could fly the airplane as well. We just happened to, our seniority drove us to the engineer seat. But you had to do it in a very diplomatic manner, and I just wasn't used to that because I had been in the left seat for a long time. So it was one of those things about, I think it was, there was a champion in those two gentlemen up front. They were just reluctant. So I had to pull those reluctant champions out to say, hey, we all bring something to the table, and we are all not flying GA to 1,500 hours. We're not all flying 172s for 1,500 hours. There's quite a wide range of experience levels in the new pilot ranks, to include the women who are in those new pilot ranks. But it was a very interesting way to diplomatically pull out that reluctant champion. But really, good play is the best revenge. We just continued to execute, be prepared, be on time, be dressed appropriately, wear the right uniform, and all of those things that are part of airline, basically as an airline employee. And it ended up where, well, you know, I have a daughter and she might be interested, or I have a niece or I have a sister. So we became kind of, the tables turned a little bit about how did you get where you are, and we could help these now champions help with their friends and family members to pursue their goals as well. So. Mm-hmm.